Word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. I just Googled the age of infographics and came up with a number of articles and, of course, maps and charts declaring that we are living in it. Infographics are visual shorthand for data in the post-newspaper-slash-social-media-slash-soundbite age. At least that's what Google turned up. Several sources there credit the digital age for giving birth to infographics. Others cite the publication of USA Today's Snapshots, beginning in 1982. Susan Shulton begs to differ. She's chair of the History Department at the University of Denver and author of Mapping the Nation. Her recent feature for Fast Company called 11 of the Most Influential Infographics of the 19th Century raised our eyebrows. Susan, great to have you on Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
So infographics in the 1800s, what kind of information was being put into graphic form then?
Well, I guess the first thing that I'd call your attention to are timelines, which actually precede the 19th century just a bit. In the mid-18th century, which would have been the mid-1700s, you've got two people, one in France and one in England, who are starting to put graphic measurement of time on chronology, so that chronology is represented by a line. And this, of course, becomes known as the timeline. Those begin to flourish in the 19th century, in part because of the rise of education, in part because of the advent of new and cheaper printing techniques. So timelines are the first to really flourish.
Today, the popularity of infographics may be due to the availability of data and interface tools for digital information. So what specifically came together in the 19th century that made that the time for graphically representing information?
I think there's a couple things at work. One is that to graphically represent information, you need information. And here I think there are two things going on. One is the rise of the census, which creates a larger and larger body of information that can be actually usefully put into graphic form. And that's also true with the natural world. If you think about the rise of observations about the landscape, about climate, about weather, all those things are aggregated information that increasingly needs to be organized. In other words, it really makes sense only to the extent that it can be organized visually. The other change I think that really makes a difference, as I said before, is the rise of new and cheaper printing techniques that make such experimentation with mapping data or graphically representing data much more possible for a wider audience.
Some of the earliest maps that we see are attempts to illustrate census data, and many of them driven by the social issue of slavery. Who was behind making these maps?
Well, maps of slavery really begin to emerge in the 1850s. There are isolated examples before. In the sectional crisis of the 1850s, the Party of the North, the Republican Party that's beginning to organize against the extension of slavery, begins to profitably map the distinction between the slave and the free states, but only in a very basic way. The map you're referring to are maps that are made by the Coast Survey on the eve of the American Civil War, where they are able to render the census of 1860 into cartographic form to show just how nuanced and differentiated the topography of slavery is throughout the South.
We looked at several of these maps online at Fast Company and also on your website. We do have links to look at both at wordofmouthradio.org. And I'm thinking of one in particular, John Smith's infographic from 1888. Can you sort of describe that for us?
Yeah, that's an odd map. It's a really interesting one. The map you're referring to, if you can call it a map, is actually an interesting narrative map. That is to say, it's trying to tell a story. In the 1870s and early 1880s, the nation, of course, was celebrating its centennial birthday, and that became an occasion for lots of attempts to look back on the century and to put the nation's history into visual and graphic form. John Smith took that opportunity to make clear that the nation was very much bisected into two pieces. One was destined to lead in a kind of righteous way, that being the North, The rest was sort of, as he put it, cursed by slavery.
Right.
And that legacy continued.
The North actually said, the line there says, God's blessing liberty and then cursed by slavery. So even number-based, information based on numbers is not always free from a little bit of editorializing.
No, and in fact, all the maps that I look at, the maps, the graphics, everything is fully editorial. For me, the interesting thing is that they're trying to tell a story through data and through cartography.
You mentioned these being used as teaching tools. Now, there's an infographic from 1864, and I'm using the term infographic, the contemporary term, which illustrates the history of the United States and intended as a teaching tool. Can you explain this for us? This is Emma Willard's chronological plan.
Yes, or as she also called it very colloquially, her tree of time, where she's looking at the nation's history from the vantage point of 1860 and trying to represent it in an organic way through a tree. What I like about hers is that she's given the United States, or America, I should say, because she goes back to 1500, she's given it a kind of organic, holistic picture and divided it into parts. I think there are four parts at this point. But she's living through, of course, an unbelievable period of upheaval. And no sooner does she create this than, when she first creates it in 1860, then the nation descends into civil war.
Your website has a number of illustrations from your book. Now, these are sort of by type and by creator. One that caught my eye was by Frances Henshaw, a graphic of her memory of Virginia, of all things.
Yes.
Can you describe it and tell us about who she was?
Absolutely. Frances Henshaw, we have her journal, her composition journal from the 1820s, and this was generously brought to my attention by David Rumsey, who has one of the most incredible websites you've ever seen, and he gives all his data away for free. And this one in particular is a young schoolgirl in, as I recall, Connecticut, who is using the book not just to recite her lessons through words, but also through graphic pictures. And some are what you might expect, tracing maps of each state. But then she also takes a page for every state and renders the state through a visual form.
Hmm.
And the graphic that you're mentioning is where she talks about the facts of Virginia and narrates it in the center. But then you notice on the side, she's actually drawn through words the geography so that she's using different techniques, in this case, a picture to teach herself geography. And this is exactly at the time when Emma Willard, who we just spoke about before, was at the peak of her power in producing new kind of graphic ways to organize information for the benefit of young students.
We talked previously on this program with an historian about a comic in Puck that may well have brought down the Republican presidential candidate of 1884. And I guess it's important to see the power of visual imagery at this time because so few Americans saw art or paintings or pictures. Is that part of the pull, the influence of these infographics at this time?
That's a great question. And I've thought about this because, as I said earlier, some of the earliest maps of slavery were drawn by the Republican Party for campaign purposes. They're very stark and they're very crude colored maps. They're very obviously propaganda, as we would call it. But it struck me that part of what they're trying to do is get their message out to a wider and wider audience that may or may not be literate or may have varying degrees of literacy. And while it might be complicated to talk about, you know, the drama of Dred Scott or the peril of expanding slavery, one map can really convey in very stark terms the threat that they're talking about. So I do think that in the 19th century, you have these rising levels of literacy, but you also have this new, forgive me, but mass medium, right? Newspapers had been around, but this ability to create atlases on a new scale, to issue textbooks on a new scale, all of which fuel the possibility that graphics might be reaching a wider audience.
And I think also influence a whole new way of thinking about information. I mean, is that what's going on here? People begin to sort of visualize things in a different way?
Well, this is something I spent a lot of time thinking about, particularly in the post-Civil War period when you see the explosion of statistical mapping. The head of the census tries to apply this kind of new form of sophisticated visualization of data on a wide scale to all aspects of the census. But what he realizes is that the people he's showing these maps to, the maps that integrate, for instance, more than one class of information, people aren't quite sure how to look at them. He has to sort of train their eye to look at the relationship between the two classes of data, for instance, shading as well as numbers. And so this is in some ways a new way of thinking about information. And as such, it creates new questions, right? What the head of the census liked was that he thought, well, if you put the census into visual form, that creates all kinds of new possibilities for asking questions about the distribution of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And things like not just the population, but wealth or literacy. If you can see the greatest areas of literacy, you can also see where they correlate to different immigrant groups, for instance, which is a particular concern that he had. But it's all about rendering the data in a spatial form.
Well, some historic gems being charted for us. Thank you so much today.
Thank you for having me.
Susan Shulton is chair of the History Department at the University of Denver and author of Mapping the Nation, which explores what she says is a period of tremendous creativity in American cartography. For links to the Fast Company article where we first saw some of these early graphics and more on her book, click on over to wordofmouthradio.org.